Show Recaps Theater presents Movies. So many movies as reviewed for you by your friends at Post Show Recaps. Featuring Grace and Ariel and their incredible movie takes, we hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. We are back. My name is Ariel, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in driving crime, Grace. Grace, how are you doing?
Am I driving, or I get to sit in the back seat all the time?
I mean, I think we switch off, right?
Like, well, sometimes... actually, I did maybe hear in the After Party podcast. Can you drive? Do you have a license? I don't think so, right?
Not in the U.S.
I mean, me either. Although my driver's license, I think, is valid in the United if I try to drive. So I think I have to drive and you sit in the back.
That's fair for now. Mm-hmm. Until I learn and then I can drive you. And when we visit Japan, I have to drive on the other side of the road.
I don't know why you always want to play this audio tape, though, of the line, the scripts. Always.
It's never in a language I understand. It's always.
That's true.
So we're here to talk about Drive My Car, the Academy Award nominee for Best Picture and Best Foreign Film.
Ariel's number one favorite movie of the year.
At
the time, this is the list for the top 10 rankings.
This is the thing. Yeah, I will not live this down. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's definitely, yes, I think it's my favorite movie of the year. It's the one that I still say, and I said this at the time, it surprised me the most. Like, I was just, I wasn't expecting anything, which is true for a lot of movies. I love to go to the movies, like, having not watched a trailer, which is pretty rare these days, but.
Are you Kevin Madeo?
Shout out to Kevin, who's not listening. And this movie, I hadn't really heard much about it, besides the fact that it was supposed to be really good. And I was a little hesitant walking in because it's 3 hours long. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about that. But now that you've gotten a chance to see it, how did you feel about it?
Yeah. I mean, I really liked it. I mean, I think this is a movie that has high expectations. When I saw that you had ranked it number one, it got nominated for an Oscar, and then you're like, boy, it's 3 hours and people still like, really, really loved it. So I was worried that I would not like it as much as people were liking it. It's just like an annoying thing that happens when, like, you know, the movie has all this like buzz around it, and then you go to watch it and you're like, that was good. I don't know, it was like the best thing I've seen, where it's like, you know, when you watch something with no hype and it turns out to be good, you're like, this was the best, everybody needs to know about this. But I thought it was really strong. We've talked a lot about when we did Licorice Pizza. I talked a lot about how like Paul Thomas Anderson wanted you to like just be in the moment, to be in this film, to like sit in a dark, empty theater and then just like feel like you're in this movie. I did not watch this in theaters, watch it through HBO, but I had that same feeling of like this was a fun movie to like, you know, sit in the car and like enjoy it as it was happening. It was very fun.
Sit in the car and watch on your phone in the back seat or the front seat while you drive.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, like you mentioned, it is as of March 2nd, it is now available on HBO Max. So, you know, I certainly invite and be to go even further. I recommend that people go and watch it. You know, to your point, because on HBO Max, people can watch it in little breaks, maybe 1 hour episode chunks if they prefer, like a little mini series.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the runtime, it's a movie that whose opening credits do not run until like the 41 minute mark.
Yeah, it's very, it's interesting, right? Yeah.
It's like, eat that, prestige dramas that are 1 hour long, and do that like 20 minutes in.
Yeah. It's wild that this like the credits just show up. You're like, oh, I thought we just weren't getting credits. They're here.
It's like, oh, look, there they are. Like someone forgot and then put them in.
Yeah.
Later. So you know, to do something like that, I think for sure shows this is a movie that is sure of itself, right? Like a movie that is not afraid to to do something like that and not, you know, not make a big deal out of it one way or the other, but just, you know, it's not a showy thing of like, ah, look at this flex, we can do it at 41 minutes, but it's just more like, that was a whole act that we, that you witnessed, that you just sat through, and now we're gonna start the movie ish.
Yeah, it's almost like a, is it, would you call it a prologue? Is that maybe, yeah, is the best way to, because like one of the main characters is not really in much of the movie for the first, like, you know, I think perhaps even before the credits, right? Driver of the car, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So, I believe, yes, that makes sense that she comes in after, and you know, this is true always, but certainly for this episode, you know, full spoilers, we will, you know, yeah, we will be discussing the plot of the movie. So if you prefer not to know that, then maybe go watch it and rejoin us. But by that point, the main character's wife has passed away. Mm-hmm. And that's when the credits roll, and we meet the driver, whose name is Misaki, one of my favorite character for sure. And yeah, I mean, we do see the red car right away. It's the red car is super important. Yes. It's called Drive My Car, and the red car, similar to like Sex in the City, the, you know, the city is the fifth lady, the car is like the third or fourth, mm-hmm, main character in this movie, I would say.
Big controversy online, Ariel. Did you know that in the original story that this movie is based on, the car was yellow? Did you know that? Big controversy.
I didn't know.
Yeah, the car was yellow, and now the car in the movie is red. So...
What a Miranda.
It's gonna cost it best picture.
Right. Like, oh, the car controversy. If only the car controversy is like the Ansel Elgort of this movie.
Oh, yes. That's right. All the movies are numbered. They all have things that we'd rather not talk about.
That we had to sweep under the rug or under the car. But yes. So yeah, I mean, technically, so the movie came out, let's see.
Technically it debuted at Cannes in July, and then in Japan it got released in August. So it has been out for a long time, but not necessarily in North America. Yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of had a staggered release all around, and I think it came out in November in the US.
Yeah.
I don't have the exact date, but yeah, big splash, you know, because of that award it won, and different festivals, and it had a lot of fanfare, like we keep saying, and you know, it was and for it to be nominated for, I'm not surprised at all that it was nominated for best foreign film, but I am so pleasantly surprised that it actually made it into best picture, especially because you know, Spider-Man and other movies were not included.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I think the thing that I liked about this movie when I watched it is that the movie kind of constantly surprises me. Is the best compliment I can sort of give writing and sort of like movies that really, like, when I walk away, I'm like thinking about it a lot and thinking, mm-hmm, about like the choices that they made is. Yeah, when the movie is surprising, and often like in comedy, that's like, you know, I feel like I can like see the joke coming. It's just like my overthinking brain. Yeah. And sometimes I feel like I can feel where the plot is going. And maybe that's just like, I mean, obviously not. This movie is finishing a thought before I do it. This is a thing I do sometimes. What I was going to say is that like, this is a foreign film. And so perhaps like, you know, is the movie surprising to me in a way because like, I am not like super well-versed in like what, you know, Japanese culture is, mm-hmm, like, and that perhaps for a Japanese audience, this movie is not surprising the way the choices people make, you know, mm-hmm, would differ based on like your cultural background, the country you live in, the things that your culture sort of values. And yet I would think not, because the movie got nominated for best picture, it is being, you know, perceived as at least one of the 10 best movies of the year. But to me, that's what I kept coming back to, is like, I thought the movie, almost, you know, the beginning of the movie, I thought was going to be very tropey in a, mm-hmm, way, and it just totally is not. The other thing I get worried about when I watch like a movie that critics are like, this movie is amazing, and then you're like, oh, he's an actor, Like, yeah, of course. Like a film goers like love a movie that's like about like an actor, director, like behind the scenes studio stuff. I mean, even like our, you know, Licorice Pizza had some like, you know, there's some like behind the scenes acting elements in that movie as well. And so I was also very worried that like, oh, I think it's going to be a movie that like hopefully can like surpass my little like annoyance of like art about art, you know. And I think it like does. It totally is more than just that, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a super tricky thing. To your point, I think, you know, obviously there are times where it's not as successful. You know, a good example of similar success for my money is it's not a movie, but a different mini series on HBO Max, Station 11, has like an element of, you know, Shakespearean theater within the story that the actors within the show are playing.
Art about art.
Yeah. Art about art. And who's then like, what is who does art A period B out?
About art.
All right, anyway. Yeah. And, you know, it can be, to your point, it can be super tropey. It can be very like hit you over the head. Like, yes, this character is now like drawing a parallel between this famous character. Like in this case, it's the play Uncle Vanya. And like, what does that mean? As someone who wasn't really familiar with the story of Uncle Vanya, I went into this pretty not knowing anything. Yes. In the dark, so to speak, like the lights weren't turned on in the car. It didn't matter. Like any good piece of art, whether it's about other art or not, it doesn't matter what other associations or knowledge you have. It just matters whether it connects with you. And I think this is super successful at that.
Totally agree. Yeah.
So I don't want to go on much further without remembering to mention that it is based on a short story by Haruki Murakami, a very beloved author, directed by Ryusuke Hamaguchi, apologies for the mispronunciations, and then adapted from that short story and then written by the director and along with Takamasa Oe.
And the song title actually is, I joked with you before the podcast that we are going to have to sing the Beatles song Drive My Car, which actually both of the short story and the film are actually named after the Beatles song Baby You Can Drive My Car. But they cannot get the rights for the song in the movie, unfortunately. But
so they just winked awesome. So they just winked at us. I didn't know that. See, wow, look at that. I learned
Baby,
something.
I love you. Yeah, that's the song.
Incredible. That's the whole song.
That's it. It's like two notes. It's one of the shorter Beatles songs.
It's like the mini series version of a full song.
That's right. No, I just don't want to get sued. You know, just more of the song. And people are like, whoa, was that? Let me see who actually.
That's uncanny that she was able to get it so fast. Yeah. Like, it is copyright infringement if you sound exactly like the Beatles. Especially.
Actually, I've invited Paul McCartney onto the podcast. Yeah, he's here. Thank you for having me. Yes,
he popped out of a cake in BoJack Horseman at the very end of an episode, and it was really his voice. And all he had to say was like, oh, bother, or something like that.
Oh, really bother, stupid. Yes, I'm from Liverpool, I'm from the Beatles. Like,
it was you in the BoJack episode, and not
it
you.
Was me in the BoJack, yeah. Well, Drive My Car, it's a great movie.
incredible. So yeah, I mean, I already alluded to this a little bit, but basically what happens in the beginning is there's the main character played by Hidetoshi Nishijima, who plays Kafuku. That's his last name. Or is it? I believe it's his last name. I know, like in their culture, like sometimes you say the last name as the first name. So I'm not 100% sure. But
I think in the movie they call Yusuku. I think is what they call, like when they're referring to him. I think that's what they refer to him as.
Yeah, Kafuku-san is like the sir version. So that makes sense. Right. Yeah. So I think his first name is the informal is Yusuke.
Yeah.
So he's the main character, the owner of said car,
which is red.
It's not red. Yeah.
Oh, they made the car red. Oh, yes.
He's married to a woman. You basically find out that she's a screenwriter, or she, you know, she's a writer for like a television network, and you know, he is also he directs plays, and you know, they have this like very creative relationship, which is super creative, because apparently when they have sex in the middle of the night or in the late hours, she relates, like, she relays rather like new stories. She relays yeah. like a story that she is making up in her head. And then when she wakes up in the morning, she can't remember and he has to repeat it back to her. Has this ever happened to you, Grace?
All my best podcasting.
Do you notion. Podcast in your sleep?
Yeah. I wake up and someone has to repeat, like, this would be good for the pod. No, mm-hmm. the movie, again, like the idea of, like, again, like, I think these movies that really want to, like, immerse you in the moment, like, this movie just starts off with, like, her speaking, like, mm-hmm. telling the story, and it's like not the story of the movie, but you're like, you're not, it's not the story of this movie, but you're not really sure as well. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's like, it's one of those things where, like, the characters are so like complete from the moment mm-hmm. we meet them, yeah. right? Like this is a story where, like, the main character, certainly Yusuke, like, does go on a character journey, figuring out his relationships, who he's going to be, but also at the same time he is a fully formed person by the time we meet him, and, mm-hmm. and Odo as well, making up stories as they're after they have been intimate, mm-hmm. is like, this is like interesting relationship dynamic that you're like, wow, this is like really fascinating. It like lures you in immediately.
Yeah, immediately. Yeah. And to your point, you have no idea what is actually going on and like yeah. what the exact parameters of their relationship is, at least in the very beginning. But this, just the fact that he's talking to her in the morning and she's like, basically hearing the story from him that she told him the night before, as if for the first time, is like such a wild thing. And you know, there's no lying, there's no putting on airs. Like, she very clearly does not remember it at all. Like, it's not, you know, it's not some vague thing of like, oh, I kind of remember. It's like a new story. Like, she's basically watching a movie, so to speak.
Yeah, it's really good. It's just it's really well done. And I like this idea of, like, you know, part of that is like, it is a foreign film, so I'm like trying to, like, I'm reading the subtitles as I'm like mm-hmm. trying to figure out what's going on. It can be a little bit confusing, but I sort of like, you know, at least for me, I like the confusion of feeling a little bit lost in this world, as Yusuke is also, you know, a bit lost in this world as well as the movie goes on. So yeah, it's clever.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And I think it's really easy to immerse yourself when you have to pay such complete attention and you can't, like, look away from the screen and just listen. You have to actively be reading. I think goes a long way. And then, so basically he, like, another thing that they do is, like, she records for him, so he both acts and directs plays, and in this case, right. he's in a production of Uncle Vanya, and she has basically recorded a cassette that contains the other lines that are not his lines, so that then in real time he can practice saying his side of the lines in the car. So you, like, he's having a conversation with himself or with her in the car while he's listening to the lines. It's almost like podcasting, but with no one there. But like, yeah. if you had recorded your lines previously, if we had a script.
Yeah. If I edited out my half of the podcast and then I played mm-hmm. it on, and yes. then I verbally said my lines of the podcast.
Right. And still left yeah. me time for my line so that we weren't like yes. tripping over each other.
Yes.
What a dream that would be.
That's very, I like this, you know, and it's something that, like, even though, fortunately, we will see that, like, some of their relationship comes to an abrupt halt, this piece of their relationship is something that, like, lingers throughout the rest of the film, mm-hmm. her line readings to him.
Yeah, it's very sweet, and obviously there is genuine tenderness between them, and obviously, you know, they are intimate, and we see that they seem to really love each other. And then something happens where he goes to the airport, and then he gets an email that, like, the flight is delayed. So he immediately, of course, drives back home and discovers that his wife is having an affair with some guy.
It's so brutal. I mean, like, I don't know whether like I should have seen it coming, but like, it's so like, it feels like they're in love. They have such a like this unique relationship. Like, it's not just like that they're like very tropey in the terms of like, oh, they love each other. Like, they have this, they have like such unique, they have such a unique relationship. So they have like her like coming up with stories and him repeating it back, and the way that like, you know, he is an actor, so like, you know, the line reading and all this, it's almost like, I don't know, it like hurts more when you're watching it to know that like she is cheating on him because their relationship is so unique, right? Yeah. That like, when are you going to find somebody who, you know, if that's what he's in love with her about, like just who she is, and that she like tells, she's writing these stories, and then she's cheating on him. It sucks. So it's brutal. It's really, yeah, it's like kind of heartbreaking. Yeah.
It's not great. And to your point, they've done such a good job in such a short amount of time of like getting us invested in the relationship, and specifically in how he feels about her, because, you know, we're getting more of his side. He is the main character, that we feel the heartbreak right with him. And when it happens, and then the crazier thing that happens is he discovers it. He walks into the apartment and then walks back out, like doesn't at all engage, doesn't do like the very, you know, over the top, oh my God, how could you do this to me, blah, blah, blah. But just like walks out and leaves.
Again, this is, for me, this is like the thing where like the movie just like surprised me. So the beginning is engaging, and then it like hits you with this like piece of plot, and then he does not do the thing you think he would, like any normal people would do. And then you sit and you're like, what, why is he like, is he protecting himself? Is he actually protecting her? Like, is he thinking like it will actually hurt her for her to realize that I know that she's cheating? Like, it's like very, very complicated and clever and well-written, and it makes him an interesting character for him to make this choice that you would not expect him to make.
Yeah. And not only does he make it here, but he continues to make it. They have interactions. They, you know, go through, it turns out that they, years before had lost a child. And, you know, it's the anniversary of that. So they're going through the service, the requisite services of that, like memorial. And he even gets into a car accident. Oh, that poor car. Gets into a car accident. It turns out like he has the beginnings of glaucoma. So like, that's why he didn't have peripheral vision and he got into the accident. And still throughout all this, like, we see her be so concerned for him. Like when she gets to the hospital, for instance, and she's like, oh my God, I'm so glad you're okay. And it all seems genuine. I mean, I guess we can't say that it's not, but it's such a fascinating dynamic in these moments.
Yeah, I mean, she is not our main character, right? It's very clearly Yusuke, so it's not Odo who's the main character. So we don't really know, is she in love with Yusuke? And so this affair is fulfilling some other like need. Is it like, you know, more of a mistake than it is like, I need, like, I'm not in love with you, and I'm like pretending. Like, we don't really know. I mean, and the other big plot twist, I feel like in the movie, not plot twist, but like a central plot point, not much later, where she dies. She has a brain hemorrhage and she dies. And so, that to me, what I thought the like, so then to have that moment where, she is dead and he has all these complicated feelings that he has clearly not like, figured out how to like move forward with them. And then to know he will like, okay, now you're not going to get like closure. With it. We are never going to know. Does Oto love you? And her cheating is something totally different, or, does she not love you? Like, boy, that's really tough. And like the fact that he like never talks to her about it, he'll just never know. And you're like, that's a brutal gut punch. And again, I just think like a really like good story beat here in this movie.
It's so brutal. And to your point, like, we're feeling exactly what he's feeling, because we never got her point of view. So like, we're left to wonder, just like him, as you said, like, what were her motivations? Why did she do it? I never got to talk to her. One of the last things she says to him is, when you come home tonight, I really want to talk to you about something. Was it that? Did she want to come clean? We don't know. Neither does he. And that's, I can't even imagine how like crazy making that must be.
it's heartbreaking because it's so real, right? Like these real things where like, yeah, you don't get to say, you don't get closure with a person that you need to have closure with. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't get to have these like last moments where you find out every single like emotional thing that they're feeling. That's how real life works. And like, we mm-hmm. often like dive into movies to have everything, you know, wrapped up nice and clean. You know, these are the stories that we're choosing to watch, or these things where like, yeah, we kind of want closure at the end. Yeah. And I love that, like, personally, I'm someone, like, I've talked a lot on this podcast about, like, I'm someone who loves a really sad movie. Like, yeah. I love, like, mm-hmm. dark themes, sad themes. And that you're like, boy, when he's like, he'll never find out. Like, the weird part of my brain is like, wow, that's really good.
That's great art. Yeah.
That's really good art. Yeah. You know?
No, it's the same where one part of my brain is like, oh, no. And the other part of my brain is like, oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
This that is the guy's good gonna stuff.
Struggle for the rest of the movie. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's brutal. And I said this off pod, but like, this movie really reminded me of one of my favorite shows, Mad Men. Like, just in the way where the characters are having, in some cases anyway, are having such honest, almost matter of fact conversations about things that matter so much, and like, it's so, the writing, like you already said, is so impressive. It's so economical. Like, it's so efficient the way they can talk about things and address things that seem almost too big to wrap your head around. And then it's basically this really quiet, soft character moment or character beat or character movie, really. It's so well done, especially with the other main character that we meet shortly after this.
Mad Men is such a good comparison because I often say that, like, I know that people will often find like, Mad Men is really boring, you know, like I really tried to get into it. It's really boring. And to me, it's so like, I feel like sometimes I'm like being like, well, actually, incredible character work, you know, but if I take two shows that I think are like from very similar time periods that are both considered like prestige TV, you have Breaking Bad and you have Mad Men. And I think that like, Breaking Bad is very like it is there's very good character work, but it's very like plot points heavy. Plot points move the story forward, like this mm-hmm. This action scene, this like this moment is going to happen, where so much of like the important stuff of Mad Men, like often the like important character thing like does not actually happen on the show. It's all about like how things elsewhere in the world like shape people and mm-hmm. who they are, and then the decisions that they make, even mm-hmm. really small decisions. Yeah. And that's entirely what this movie feels like. Like it's kind of hard to talk through this movie like plot by plot, like beat mm-hmm. by beat, because not actually a ton happens in this movie. It's so much just like seeing how these things that have happened in their lives are mm-hmm. now affecting the decisions that they're making in their like regular everyday lives, not during these like huge crisis moment. Because like I would say like all this like the crisis moments from For Yuzuke all happen in, you know, what we kind of have called the prelogue of the movie, or the prologue of the movie, right? Everything else is kind of just like we're just watching him live his life for the most part, right? So
and riveted. Like it was 3 hours for me anyway. For me personally, it was probably, I mean, who's to say, like I don't have them all top of mind, but for sure one of the quickest 3 hour experiences that I have ever sat through. Like it just, I kind of almost didn't want it to end, and for it to get to this point, it is finally here. We already said it's a 41 minutes, but like after all this stuff has happened with his wife and he has lost her, that now this is his trauma that he will now live on with for the rest of the movie, and now we can get to the rest of the movie. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's really good.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
So then we fast forward 2 years and we meet. He's going to put on this play he's casting all these people, and he ends up casting the guy who his wife was sleeping with, but the guy who his wife was sleeping with doesn't know that that Yusuke knows it's him. Like, there's this, it's again the secret, oh, this thing that innocent, we know.
Koji. Yeah. I guess not innocent, but you
know. Not, well, ultimately, yeah, be proven to not be so,
yeah, definitely innocent. Not innocent at all. This was, but yeah,
innocent in some ways, right? Like, innocent in
young, immature,
and innocent of, immature is a better way of putting it, for sure. But I love, that's the kind of thing where, like, it's so juicy when it happens, and you're just like, yes, cast him. You know he's gonna cast him, and everybody else is like, "Is he good?" And the guy, and Yusuke is like, "Yes, we're casting him."
Yes, keep eyes on him. Yes, but not really. I don't. You know, I think you know, it's interesting because, like, this is to me, this is like Yusuke kind of being like, "Can I figure out my wife through this kid? Like, what was going on?
Yes,
let me, like, watch him every day perform in this play, and, like, just try to figure him out, you know, and will figuring him out lead me to figure out what my wife was getting out of cheating on me with him. You know, it's a very, like, in some ways you could be like, what a bad choice. Do not hire Koji. Do not hire him. This will be bad. And at the same time, you're like, oh, but also hire him so that, like, yeah, we can also figure out, like, what the heck is going on, you know?
Yeah, so, it's this, like, really fascinating way of, like, helping, or he thinks that he, whether it's, you know, whether it's conscious or subconscious, he's like, this guy is going to help me, you know, learn about my wife, like, almost, like, help me basically work through my trauma that, you know, even 2 years later, he's obviously still living through. But speaking of trauma, we meet my favorite character, Misaki Watari, who is his driver, I love the scene of, like, they're like, you have to have a driver. The people who are, like, basically funding his new production of Uncle Vanya. They're like, there was an artist that ran over someone a while ago, so now everyone has to have a driver. And it's, like, casual.
He has found out that he, like, his vision is, like, right? Like, isn't he not going to get covered by insurance as well?
He knows that, that he has glaucoma, but the people who are putting on the show don't seem to know that. Yeah. And to that point, I didn't even think about it in the moment of, like, that's just another reason why he shouldn't be driving. But the doctor did tell him, you know, it's not that you shouldn't be driving. It's just, you know, you have to be aware of it. So I think, just as far as public safety is concerned, he should probably just hire her full time.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Their dynamic is my favorite of the movie, Yusuke and Misaki, his driver, because there's so much, I spoke before about, like, economy of dialogue, right? There are various conversations they have throughout the movie that say so much, and they can basically be themselves with each other and be honest with each other and work through their respective trauma with each other in a way that I think surprises both of them.
Yeah, I mean, Masaki is going through Masaki.
Yeah.
Going through a lot of trauma as well. Very lucky that these two have found each other. And I sort of love the relationship here too, as well as like, it makes sense that Yusuke, because I kind of figured like he was like told absolutely not, like you cannot drive, which like I guess I was assuming it from like a medical perspective, but maybe I just totally missed that. But it makes sense that like he clearly loved his wife, and he has this like thing that he can do in the car, right? Like he's working on, like he's made a very clear choice to be like, I'm gonna put on Uncle Vanya, like, I'm gonna put on the play Uncle Vanya, right? He could have done anything else. He cannot finish the performance after his wife dies, right, of the play. Very easy to be like, yeah, not doing that one, I'm gonna do something else. But he does have this like the tape recording, right, of his wife reading him the lines, that like for him is this moment in time when his relationship was not yet broken, not yet he didn't have like doubt in it. She is just like, from what he like, just lovingly reading the lines, and they can chat through. And again, I don't know enough about like Uncle Vanya to know like how much like meaning there also is in like the actual dialogue of the play. But then to like have that where you can like, it's the time where he does listen to it is in the car,
have,
like somebody else who like sits in and like listens to it, like that's frustrating. And so, and I love how like just very quickly, I think this is at the dinner scene with one of the producers of the play and the actress that they hired, who is a deaf, and you realize that they are actually together, which I feel like is a big red for that guy not to tell. Actually, we're
dating. So she tries out, the wife of the producer tries out, unbeknownst to us, they're married.
Yeah.
And then we find, I think she's mute. She can hear, but she also speaks Korean. So like their what I love about this movie is there's so much about, like, it's about communication, but it's also about like communication, how you can communicate with people when you're not speaking the quote unquote same language, whether it be like actual language or emotional language or being truthful or anything like that. And obviously, Yusuke and his wife weren't always speaking the same language because she was cheating on him. But so the dinner scene, like, he has now hired the wife of the producer, and they have this dinner scene, and he apologizes beforehand. He's like, oh, I'm sorry I didn't tell you, but she didn't want you to feel pressure to hire her because she was my wife. And I'm thinking, shouldn't it be the other way around? Shouldn't it be like, I didn't want to tell you because you wouldn't hire her?
This is the thing where I feel like, I think I'm missing a little bit of like the culture, like the Japanese context, culture, right, where like, it's very like, more like, it would have been impolite to tell you because it would have been pressure on you.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense.
To hire her, right? It's like, like a little bit background, which like from, I think, our culture. But this is the scene where, does that like, how's your driver sitting right there?
And yeah.
Like, she's actually like really good. She's actually like an incredible driver.
I love this scene. It's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. There are like a few that stick out in my mind. And this is one, because at this point, like, he, you know, at first he didn't even want the driver, and then he made her do a test. And of course they basically hit it off because she's super respectful. She was respectful of the car, even in the way that she's like turning on the car, you could just see it immediately. And now sometime a little bit later, when they're sitting at this dinner scene, he's able to speak not just positively of her, but like so effusively. He's like, sometimes I forget I'm in the car. Like, I don't mind that she's listening. You know, to your point, he plays that tape, and it's such an intimate thing, right? That he shared with his wife, and now she's dead, and he's practicing for his play, but he's also like living, processing this trauma of his dead wife, who he's listening to day in and day out. And he says that he forgets that Misaki is there, and the driving is incredibly smooth, and he's really happy that she's his driver. It's so sweet. Like, it's such a dumb thing, like so small of a detail.
You. Yeah.
But the acting for that, like, it's so incredible. And like, to have Misaki sitting there and have to just like, and to her, it's a little bit like, you're already a little bit removed, right? Because she's only quote unquote the driver.
Right.
So she got kind of invited to come into dinner because she was there. It would have been awkward for her to just like sit outside.
Yeah.
And now they're talking about her and complimenting her, so much so that in that moment, she instead of reacting, she goes and plays with the dog. Like, she gets up out of the chair yes. and she goes to play with the dog, which is like the most relatable thing anybody ever does.
100%. Yeah.
But I loved that moment, like this kindness and this genuineness that he like opens up in front of her, where he's not talking to her, but he's saying it knowing she's listening.
It's really great. Yeah. Yeah. And as they've bonded over their shared trauma, like, you know, he does reveal, like, you know, the interesting thing about like the loss of their daughters, like their daughter would have been the same age, basically, like roughly.
Yeah. 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 The same age as Misaki, which is, you know, some people be like, oh, that's lame. That's cool. It's like, listen, that's just how life goes. Sometimes you meet someone and they're the age that the daughter would have been. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. And then she reveals sort of, what she's been struggling with.
Her trauma of Misaki's trauma of, you know, first she reveals, more importantly, why she's such a good driver, which was that she would drive her mom back and forth like about an hour, which is the same amount of time that she is now driving Yusuke. She would drive her mom to and from a train station to get to work, and her mom would want to use that hour time to sleep. And if Misaki drove in a way that would wake her mother up, her mother would kick the back of the chair and then also hit her, like, later on when they got out of the car, which I'm laughing, but like, it's just so ridiculous and messed up would do this, but that's why she's such a good driver.
Brutal. Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, oh, got it, yeah, totally understood why she's a driver.
Yeah,
makes a lot of sense. And eventually we find out that Yusuke reveals to Misaki that like he wonders about like what he could have done, like had he gone home sooner, would his wife Ato have died, you know, could he have done more to basically get there sooner to prevent her death, or at least, you know, I don't know, have some events could have been different, right?
He's wondering about the what ifs, you know.
Yeah. So many what ifs. And then she reveals a little what if of her own, that like her there was this mudslide in the village that she came from, where she grew up, and she was able to escape the house, but her mother was stuck inside, and she knew that her mother was stuck inside, and instead of like calling for help right away or trying to save her, she just kind of stood there seemingly for some amount of time, and she kind of doesn't know why she did that.
Does she tell this at this like midway through the movie, or is this like
no, this is something that comes like this point in the movie. She only tells him about the kicking thing and why she's such a good driver
and the mudslide. Like, she does tell that, yes, like,
and her mother's, and she mentions the mudslide, yeah.
But I think it's like really interesting again of like these like you know, is the good thing to do? I mean, it's like a huge trauma you're like carrying right with you of like her to tell, but like she does not like he is like opening up to her. She does like talk about the abuse, right? But she's not willing to like fully be like, and also like, I might have been able to save my mom and I chose not to. Like, I don't know if I could have, but I definitely chose not to. She holds that back, which I think is, it's just like, I think that makes the movie interesting because like, there's enough of a reveal here that I'm like, oh, they're like bonding and like they have so much in common that they would have never known. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, she's like, and also I'm going to like tell you more about what happened. I think it's like, again, it's surprising, I think, because like, it's not like she lied earlier. It's not like she did. Like,
no,
it's
just, no, they're like, they're peeling back layers.
Yeah. Like an onion.
Yeah. I'm going to cry because of the onion.
And I just think it's a really good choice. That's kind of like, that's how relationships are, right? Like, when you're like getting to know somebody and you trust them, you'd be like, let me like tease this part. Like, let me tease something. Like, let me like tell you about this and see how you react. And then maybe like 2 months down the road, I'll like actually tell you the fuller story, you know? Like, you have to earn people, you have to earn the trust, right? So I think it's like just, it's really clever writing, I think, and it's really good.
And this specifically, like, I already mentioned Mad Men, but their dynamic specifically reminded me a lot of Don and Peggy on Mad Men, because it was
comparison.
They could be themselves with each other in a way that they couldn't be with other people, and there wasn't any of this like romantic baggage or any expectation romance, or it was just like two people that happened to be a man and a woman, but it doesn't really matter. We're being open with each other and we're getting to know each other in this very organic way. And it's just effing beautiful. Like, I don't know how else to put it. It's so profound and it's so simple, but it's so affecting.
Well, I mean, the heart of this movie, like the theme of this movie to me is like, how do you treat people who don't love you back as much as you love them? Right. Like what do you do when you find out that information that like, somebody does not hold you to the same regard that you might hold them. Like, I think there's a bit of a difference between like, Misaki and like her mom, right? Like it's a different relationship between like a daughter and a mother, and I'm gonna quote Euphoria here. Euphoria has a scene where they're talking about the characters Cal and Nate, father and son, and it says like, you can hate your parent, like you had no choice in this relationship. It's a little bit different for like you to hate your kid, you know?
Yeah.
So like that's here, like I have a lot more for like Misaki, obviously, and like, you know, her struggle with this relationship, and it's like her mother who is like abusive to her. But, you know, again, it's her mother, right? Like it is somebody that like she is has a relationship with, is close, she drives around, you know? And so how do you respond? How do you react? How do you move forward when somebody who you love does not love you back as much as, you know? And that's particularly strong in the Yusuke and Otto relationship, right? Like she is literally cheating on him. He'll never know why. He'll never know if she actually loved him as much as he loved her, you know? And he just has to like figure out how to move forward, never knowing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool. This movie's really good.
It's, you're like, wait, is this movie good?
It should get nominated for an Oscar.
People should watch this movie, and then like people who can vote on Oscar things should vote on it.
Yeah. Paul, do you get the vote? Yes. I only picked it for best movie. Yes.
Sorry. So the other another fascinating dynamic in this movie is Yusuke's relationship with Takashi, and Takashi is the man that he saw his wife sleeping with at the very beginning of the movie. And like we mentioned, he casts him in his play, and then they have like several conversations throughout the movie, I guess similar to, right, his conversations with Misaki, in the sense that they're spread out throughout the movie and they learn a little bit more about each other as they go. And in this case, he's like, as much as he wants to, and he's conflicted, right? He's a director. He hired this guy. He wants him to do good work. But he's giving him advice. Like, he's giving him life advice as they dance around, like, any mention of the wife of Otto.
Yeah, Koji's basically like, well, I was like in love with your wife, but never says I slept with your wife. She was really brilliant. She's really smart, you know?
Yeah.
Come on, buddy. Give it up.
Even Yusuke says to him, he's like, oh, I know you loved her. And he's like, oh yeah, I mean, unrequited love. Like, you know, I was like, who couldn't love her? Like, she's so lovable.
Yeah, so lovable.
Like what he says. And he tries to like instill knowledge in him. And even though Takashi's character doesn't have like a happy ending, I mean, at least as far as this movie, who knows how, you know, what kind of life he'll have after he gets out of jail potentially, it's so fascinating that he tells him like, you need to have control, you need to be smarter about your decisions. And then he tries to teach him about the art, right, about Uncle Vanya as like a piece of art, and it's like, you need to let it, it's asking you a question. I loved this because I think this was about art in general, right? Of like, it's asking you a question and you need to figure out like what your answer is.
Yeah, because we've seen like a lot of what we see like Koji through the movie is like he's really struggling with like the actual performance of Uncle Vanya as they're like during rehearsals. Like it's not working quite the same way. Like it seemed to be like working in the audition, which could be just because like Yusuke maybe shouldn't have hired him to be the role. Right, and he's also like, you can feel as it's not working, he's also he's letting his anger sort of get the best of him. There's like particularly a scene where like he kind of does need to be like a bit confrontational with like the other actress, the other lead in the play. And Yusuke can kind of see like he's kind of like an angry man, you know, he's like he's an angry young man, and is trying to, it's like, again, the things that are surprising is this is not a movie where like our main character, we shouldn't like Koji, and then for the movie to be like, yeah, we don't like it, like let him like do whatever. It's like Yusuke is like a really nice man who like does try to help Koji like through this, and obviously like Koji does not take it his advice. He follows a journal, like a what I assumed like a paparazzi photographer, and beats him and kills him.
He beats him like to a point where the guy is seriously hurt, and then he dies later on in the hospital. So like he doesn't quote unquote kill him, but he does enough bodily harm to him and that he eventually dies.
I don't even know. Some lawyer will.
Yeah, right. Some lawyer will.
It might be like first degree. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's basically Koji's end to the movie, and you know, it's actually what makes it. Yes, it's what makes like so after his wife died originally, Yusuke had been in a production of Uncle Vanya and he had like a breakdown basically mid performance and he couldn't complete it, and now he's presented with either you recast, or at this point there's no time to recast, either you play Uncle Vanya or we have to cancel the whole thing and all this has been for nothing. And like, you know, it's as a metaphor for like how far he has come by the time the movie ends, like he has worked through, or with the help of Misaki has worked through some of his trauma, and now he's ready to play this role that he wasn't ready to play before.
It's, I mean, you know, the cheesy thing of like, yeah, is playing a role, and literally like he has to play a role in his life that he's like not ready to do until he actually like does realize he can do it. Like, little cheesy, but somehow like all works. And the idea that like it's the same play, he has like a breakdown, it's also the same like role that like his wife has read the lines to him for, and so he like knows the play so intimately, and now he has to step up. Like, there's a world in which like this movie is like super cheesy and it doesn't work, and yet it works so well. Like the writing here of like him stepping into this performance is really good. Yeah.
Yes, for sure. And then so you know, the culmination of Yusuke and Misaki's relationship is that basically at the end, Misaki has not returned to her village where the horribleness happened, the mudslide, and you know, the her mother passing. Basically, she drove away from there and kept going until she couldn't drive anymore, and that's how she ended up where they are now. And he goes with her, and she asks him to come with her, and she goes, and they stand and look at the place. I mean, now it's basically an empty lot, or not a lot. It's not a parking, and you know, they didn't put up a parking lot, so to speak, but there is just like ground and dirt now. This is like her, you know, he helped her get to this point now where she could literally and metaphorically get to this place of, okay, I'm ready to face this thing that I did or didn't do, and it's because of you. And they share like this very sweet hug, and it's, again, it's super, it's like a, it's just like two souls who have comforted each other, just comforting each other now physically. It's very sweet.
It's really good. Like, it should not be like, if you like describe the scene, like they walk up on a, you know, like a mudslided house, it's like, there's like, again, this is not the, like, we don't like, it's not the movie where like the mudslide happens,
right?
But like, you know, we're just like walking up on where the mudslide was, and it's just like super super powerful emotional scene. This is where she does reveal like, I think I might have been able to like save her, But I like chose not to. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think he really like says anything. I guess he's like, yeah, I might have, you know, if I went home early, I'm going to save my wife too. But like,
yeah,
what good does that do me to like, you know?
Yeah. I love that moment where I think they were still driving, but she admits that he says, yeah, I feel the same way about my wife. He's like, if you were my daughter, you know, hinting again at like the age dynamic and like her being literally about the same age as his daughter would have been. If I were your father, I'd put like my hands on your shoulder and tell you that like it wasn't your fault and it's okay. But he's like, but I'm not your father, and you did kill your mother, and I did kill my wife, basically. And it's like, it's brutal, but it's also very real and very honest.
This movie doesn't try to really like walk away. I don't know that he does any, like, is it like unique thing for him to do to like not confront his wife, ever tell his wife like, hey, I know you cheated, mm-hmm. you know, like kind of, I feel like much different with like, you know, Misaki, that like, is a little bit more like you could have done something and should you have done something, like maybe, but the movie doesn't ever really try to like, I think these people are good people, mm-hmm. who maybe at times during their lives have made like not the best decision, but doesn't mean they're like bad people. And nor does it really try to be like, these are the best people in the whole world, you know?
Yeah. They're just people.
They're just people. Yeah.
They're just lowercase people.
Lowercase people.
Not capital, not the magazine. No. And that's, I think that's the movie. I mean, it's 3 hours long. The movie.
She gets the car at the end, right?
Oh, that's right. So basically she steals the car. No, I'm just kidding. So
where we get the car chase.
It's a car movie. Shout out Jess Sterling. At the end, he of course plays the role that all the work of putting on the show isn't for naught. He's able to do it. And then there's a little bit of a flash forward. We're not sure how long, but her hair looks different.
Yep.
And she has been given the car seemingly as a gift by him. By Yusuke, and she has a dog.
Yeah, she's a little dog. It's really cute. It's like, it's not like this like huge, like, you know, the post-credit scene, you know. Mm-hmm. This is like very nice little epilogue. Yeah. That's like,
I think he's wearing if I'm remembering correctly, he's wearing a yellow collar. So maybe this is the call out to the yellow.
Ah, yes, his collar was yellow. Yes. That's great. Great movie. Okay. It's really great. I love this movie. Like, I think this is a movie. I'm going to give a shout out to the Movie Ladder podcast, where often like they'll watch a movie and then be like, yeah, that was okay. And they get on and talk about it and they'll like be like, yeah, I was going to give it like a 3, but I think after talking about it, I'm going to give it like a 3.5. Yeah, this feels like a movie where I was like, oh, I would give this movie like 4.5 stars. Mm-hmm. And after talking about it, I'm like, I kind of get like 5 stars, you know, like I feel like it's almost better than I even thought it was. And I thought it was amazing. Mm-hmm.
I was super happy that I got to see it in a theater when it has its limited run. Although now since it got nominated, of course they're like, oh yes, see this movie.
Every theater in my town is like, yeah, we're playing Drive My Car.
It's been here all along. What do you mean?
Every theater but right... in town's playing Drive My Car. Yeah.
In the UK, really?
Yeah, in the UK. Yeah.
But no, rightfully so, a movie like this that otherwise unfortunately wouldn't be seen by as many people unless it had gotten nominated gets its due and gets to, you know, have its moment in the limelight. Grace, is there any world where this movie wins? And how, I mean, we talked a little bit about this in the Oscars coverage that we did, but
there is a world, I think, in the
multiverse, there's got to be.
In one of the 10, yeah. Uh-huh. I think in a post-Parasite world, I think that it certainly could win. I feel more likely, I feel like there's just such a clear run favorite for the Oscars. I do not feel like Drive My Car is going to win. We talked a lot about like how, where like sometimes at the Oscars, like, if the movie like this got nominated, I mean, it will probably win best foreign film. Although there's another film that I actually think, like, we talked about this a little bit offline, where like Worst Person in the World is a movie that's nominated for best foreign film. That's also getting like a ton of buzz as being like one of the best movies of the year. Or like, it could be this weird thing where like, even though Drive My Car is nominated for best picture, it might not win Best Picture or Best Foreign Film, like Worst Person in the World, could you brought this up because I always said it's kind of a spoiler when you nominate a foreign film for best. Like, I'm happy it gets nominated, but I'm like, I kind of know what's going to win Best Foreign Film if it like also got nominated for Best Picture. But yeah. My point is, I was going to say there is a world in which I think I do not think there's a runaway winner for Best Director, and I think Ryusuke Hamaguchi could sort of, that's where he gets recognition.
Although
it's probably going to win Best Foreign Film, so it will get recognized there.
Yeah,
it'll get Best Director to someone else. But
it's hard.
There is a world in which it wins, you know, two.
All of them. The car could win. The car could win Best Car.
Well, it was a yellow car.
God, we should wrap
playing
up.
Playing the role of the red car was the actor. The yellow car
was the yellow car.
You might not recognize me, but yes.
This is crazy. Grace, you have so many things.
Yeah.
So many things to plug. Maybe pick like two or three.
Euphoria with Bryce Isaiah, The Feedback Show, and I'm on Winning Time with Jason Reed, Raised by Wolves, and Our Flag Means Death are kind of the things I'm doing on Potion Recaps. Yeah, that's more than two. And then a sports show coming back on Rob's podcast. But yeah,
that's okay.
I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace.
Yeah. You're with me, and I am famously not able to restrict myself to a few things like that. Yes, I am on Twitter as well at That Other Ariel. I am on Letterboxd at AR_F and F as in Frank. And I am covering The Dropout, the Hulu miniseries about Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos scandal with Marissa. And the first three episodes are out, and then we are now weekly. The next episode comes out in a couple of days. That's on Binge Show Recaps feed. And you and I might make an appearance on a different movie podcast.
You got announced on the podcast. So we
could... It did. I know. That's why I felt okay announcing it. We're going to be on the feedback show on Everything is Super with Kevin Mahadeo himself, who doesn't listen to anything, and Josh Wiggler. So I'm excited to talk about a different 3-hour movie that was not as
easy to sit through
The Batman.
The week of 3-hour movies.
Yes.
The Batman.
3-hour movies.
Yeah. Robbie P. Pretty great.
Yes.
You had to Robbie P during the movie because it was 3 hours long.
Yes. Yes, yeah. I did. I did. I tried not to, but I had to.
Should we say what we're doing next week? Because we know what we're doing next week, and people will be able to watch it even if they don't go to the theaters. So.
I think we have to now.
Yeah.
You'd say it.
I'm very excited. We are heading back into the land of Pixar. We're going to be watching Turning Red. I'm very excited. It's set in Toronto.
Grace, this is your moment. This is your moment. This is the big Toronto, as in like... a la like Big Pharma, the Big Toronto Tourism Board is
Big
a buzz
Toronto,
right now.
Big Six. I am not going to be the only Canadian on the podcast next week.
What? I'm going to be outnumbered?
Yeah, you're gonna be outnumbered. Yeah. Yeah, you could be honorary Canadian.
Special guest. Yeah. Ooh, I would
special
love that.
Guest. Yeah.
Yes, we'll be covering. And great buzz, you know.
Big
I've
buzz.
Been
would you, some... you send me a tweet? Sean Fennessy says it's the best Pixar movie he's ever seen.
Not quite that, but he said it's his favorite Pixar movie since Inside Out, and definitely easily top 10, something along those lines.
There was another tweet I saw from this musician. He was in the Beatles. He said, "Yeah, I love the movie. Yes, it's so good. I wish it was called Turning Yellow, but that's okay." It's not even a very good Paul Guardians.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good, I gotta say. I hate to admit it, but it's one of your better
it's
ones.
Really for Deidre.
Shout out to Deidre. Okay, on that note, I don't want to give Grace any more opportunities to do the damn accent. If you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. As always, we will be back next week with our coverage of Turning Red as I turn red.
All right, bye.